Hold on to your hats. The countdown to the biggest wellness event of the year is on.
Join us on August 15 and 16 in Melbourne for not one, but 2 days of Powerhouse Wellness, featuring 11 of Australia's most inspiring, entertaining, educating, fermentating speakers.
Damo, what is fermentating?
MP, I'll tell you at the summit.
Your favourite wellness couch speakers are joined by special guest Nat Kringoudis on all things hormones and female health.
Join the Up For A Chat girls, the wellness guys, the natural nutritionist Steph Lowe, Kale Brock, Quirky Cooking's Joe Witt, Marcus Pierce, and the rest of your favourite wellness couch podcasters.
Regular and VIP tickets are still available, but hurry before this summit is sold out. For tickets, go to www.thewellnesssummit.com. The Wellness Summit is proudly brought to you by Well & You. Be someone that makes you happy.
Couch.com, streaming and listen to your lives.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Karen's Couch once again this week. Now, this week, you know, it took me a little bit of thinking to think about who I could bring to you. And the reason that it took a little bit of thinking was because I, as all of you know who follow the show, I am an avid supporter of animals and anything to do with animal cruelty. I'm the first one to stand against it. And I'm the first one to stand for animal welfare and love and kindness and gentleness. You know, one of the greatest issues that I believe that exists on our planet is the lack of harmony and the lack of unity between humans to humans, but also humans to our animals, which, you know, I've always believed are the custodians of this planet. And about 2 years ago, I came across an organization called Edgar's Mission, and I nearly fell off my chair because my brother and sister-in-law bought me a cow, and her name's Blossom. And I got a beautiful picture, because I've always wanted a cow. You probably already know that. And I got the most beautiful picture of Blossom that arrived in the mail as I was her best buddy. And it was the most incredible birthday present somebody like me could ever, 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 ever get. And what that did was set me on a trail of following Edgar's Mission. Every post, every email, every newsletter, everything that they do, I've been following them. And I donate monthly to a number of different animal welfare charities, and Edgar's Mission is one of them. So it makes no, it's no surprise that I would bring you the founder of Edgar's Mission to today's show. So please welcome the beautiful Pam Ahern to Karen's Couch. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Karen, and hello to your listeners, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's an absolute treat to be able to talk about all things animals for once and to just be able to go where no other conversation goes. So, Pam, hit us with it. Tell us about Edgar's Mission. Tell us about how it got started and why on earth did you start it? I mean, this is an incredible gift to all sentient beings. What inspired you?
A pig. In 2003, Edgar Allan Pigg, he came into my world, and he really did irrevocably change it forever. I think we both got a pretty good deal out of that, because Edgar was born on a farm. He would have been made into bacon when he was about 6 months of age, but there was obviously a greater hand working at play in the fate of both of us.
Yeah.
For as long as I can remember, though, I have been fascinated, like yourself, with the animals and the natural world. As a child, I grew up in suburbia, and we had cats and dogs in our house. I had real animals in my room, and I spent hours in the backyard fascinated by insects and bees. I loved animals. Always wanted a pony. Always wanted a pony, but my folk were city folk, and they weren't particularly well off. So my pleas for a pony fell on deaf ears. But my mother always said the worst thing you can say to Pam is that you can't. And it wasn't because I was a belligerent child or a little rebel rouser. It was because I really loved a challenge. You know, when you say to yourself, what if?
Yeah.
So, the intrepid five-year-old that I was, I grabbed my scooter. I took the wheels off my scooter. I grabbed a pair of my mum's pantyhose. I tied a tie to each end of the pantyhose, and I rode the kitchen stool around for hours. And
oh, I think that's great.
My mum got sick of not having any pantyhose, so she took me off to the local pony club. And that was where my relationship with larger farm animals really began. And years later, we moved to the country, and I began an equestrian career. which I love because it took me all around Australia. I used to go to all the agricultural shows and fairs and expos, and so I used to be able to go and see all the cows and the sheep and the pigs and the chickens, and I would spend hours in there learning about them, speaking to farmers and how to care for them. And I was really very much an animal lover.
Yeah.
I subscribed to a little booklet that you got in the paper called The Cruelty-Free Shopper. It talked about companies that don't test on animals.
Yes, 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 I know that one.
It's a great little booklet to have. And that sort of got me thinking about, you know, it's so easy to care for animals by not buying products that are tested on them. And there are so many good companies out there that don't test their products on animals. It's so easy for us to support them. So I started doing that. And in the booklet one time, there was a little thing about a fur rally in Melbourne, and or anti-fur rally, I should say. Fur was, you know, losing favour, and people were realising how cruelly animals are raised for fur. And I thought, well, that is really terrible. So I rang up the lady who was organising the rally and asked, could I go along to the fur rally? And she said, yes, that's great that you come along. And I remember saying to her at the time, I said, oh, but look, I do feel a little bit bad because, you know, we still eat meat and, you know, I wear animal products. And she said, look, that's fine. It's not what's on your plate. It's how it gets there that you need to start to think about. So I went along to the fur rally, and it was quite successful. The companies, you know, were listening to consumers saying that they didn't want animals used for fur. But I started talking to some people at the rally, and they told me about this book. You know, you must read this book. If you love animals, you must read this book. And the book was called Animal Liberation. And I was a little bit scared about reading it because I was a very right-wing conservative family girl, and the word liberation really sent shivers up my spine. They were the terrorist people. We didn't want to have anything to do with them. But my curiosity was really piqued. So I borrowed the book, and I was just reading the dust jacket of the book, and it talked about Peter Singer, who was the author, and he was in England, and he was taken by some mutual friends to the local chapter of the RSPCA because the friend thought, you know, they both cared about animals and they would get on well. And they were getting on really well talking about animals and how they could better their world. And it came time for afternoon tea, and they served ham sandwiches. Peter thought that was pretty odd, and I thought, well, he's got a point.
Absolutely.
That was the point where my life and my menu changed forever, because here I was saying I cared about animals, rescuing cats and dogs, going out and saving wildlife, yet dimming millions of animals to terrible lives and short lives as well. So that was really what kicked off my change in everything. But then in 2003, I was working with Animals Australia on a campaign called the Save Babe campaign. And that was
Great
campaign. That's right. It was highlighting the plight of pigs in Australia and our flawed animal protection legislation, which means we can do things to pigs that if we did to our cats or our dogs, we'd be charged with cruelty. And the only difference being that they look different. So we thought, well, we really need to get media attention because the code of practice that governs pig farming was actually being reviewed at the time. Now, when these codes of practice are reviewed, the public can actually have input into them to actually say, you know, how we want laws framed in our country. But the public didn't know about this. So we really needed to create awareness. And as luck would have it, at the time, James Cromwell, who played Farmer Hoggett in Babe, was in Australia. Yeah. And we said, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get James on board with his media profile to raise awareness about our issue? Managed to get in touch with James. James turned out to be the most wonderful human being you could ever imagine. He does a lot of work in America for animal rights causes, but he also does a lot for human rights as well with the American Indians. So it just goes to show that caring for animals and caring for humans is not mutually exclusive. So there we were. We had James on board. We wanted to get some media interest. And the journalist was very interested, but he wanted a photo of James and a pig. So we had to hunt around to get a pig, and I approached one of the children's farms. Could we get a photo of James and the pig? And they said, look, that's fine, but it will cost you $150. And I said, well, pigs, I didn't have $150. And I also have a bit of a problem with children's farms in that they always have this proliferation of baby animals.
Yeah.
And then when they're no longer cute and baby anymore, they get rid of them, or they end up in the food production system. So I really didn't want to give them any money, but I did have land. So I got a pig, and that was Edgar Allan Pig. And the rest is the most colourful history, and it also created, I think, one of the most amazing places on earth. You know, we've just moved to this new farm over here in Lats with 153 beautiful acres. We're developing it as not only a sanctuary for animals but as a tourist destination as well, where people can come and meet these animals, learn about what their lives are really like, and then decide for themselves how they think they should be treated. But one of the things that keeps me going when I see so much tragedy and heartache in the world is the goodness of the human heart. I truly believe in the goodness of the human heart and that we are programmed to care. Mm. And that program to care is really what is going to ensure our survival on the planet. And as you mentioned earlier about this disconnect that a lot of people have with animals, it really real is not only to the detriment of animals but also to the detriment of humans. Because once we start not to care about something, once we say it's only a chicken, it's only a pig, it's only a cow, a part of our heart starts to shut down, and then it's easy not to care about other things based on our familiarity with it or our use of it. So I think caring about animals really embraces all sorts of caring. It's really like kindness sans frontiers, that we have kindness without borders. And this is the thing that I see over and over again with Edgar's mission, that whether it's someone who finds an animal in trouble or distressed or someone who comes here and they learn about these animal stories, it touches their heart.
Oh,
and it empowers them that we can make a difference. It's so easy to give up hope in this world. You know, you open the newspaper, you turn the TV on, and there are all these terrible stories. But at the heart of those terrible stories is someone said, I don't care how my actions impact upon someone else. And that's happened somewhere in their life. They've learned not to care. And I think if we can teach children, teenagers and adults to care without borders, the world is going to be a better place, not only for animals but humans as well.
So I saw a video flash up on Facebook a couple of months ago, and it was this young kid, and his parents gave him some lamb to eat. And when the parents said it was lamb, the day before he'd been to one of those petting zoos and he'd played with the lamb.
Oh,
and he associated the lamb with the lamb and, you know, was in tears and was devastated and said, why do people do that? Why do you want me to eat that? That's hurt the lamb. Why must I eat the lamb? I'm not going to eat the lamb. And it made me, you know, it made me really curious, because I just wonder if the beginning, you know, like, and I don't know, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe I'm clutching at straws, but I think we're so disconnected from our food production. You know, we buy our meat from the shopping centre or from the butchers, and we don't ever see the actual animal. So we're so disassociated from the animal and the food.
And I
think if you show a child a lamb and then give it lamb, it won't eat it, because instinctively children know. Yet we've been conditioned and disassociated so significantly.
I think that is really true, and it's been to the success of, you know, animal-based agriculture that
totally.
We never think about that food on our plate. We see this, we don't think about what her life was like, whether he was happy or sad. Were they frightened as they were hauled up to be slaughtered? We don't think about that because it's uncomfortable, so we don't go there.
Yeah.
And the other difficulty, I think, is we have that everyone else around us is doing those things, so we never – to question. I remember when I was on my journey, I was learning about these things, and I was thinking, well, if it was so bad what's happening to animals, other people would be talking about it. Other people would be doing something about it. And I think everybody sort of has that little bit of a notion. It's a bit like that wonderful children's tale about the emperor's new clothes. Like, we all know the emperor's not wearing any clothes, but no one is actually game enough to say, hey, he's not wearing any clothes. The wonderful thing, though, I see now, and from my journey, I actually stopped any animal products 30 years ago, is that now people know the word vegan. You can go to restaurants where it's actually on the menu, and we can find so many foods in our local supermarkets. Well, it was terribly hard. 30 years ago, I was actually a vegan for 3 years until I ran into someone who was a vegan, and they told me I'd been pronouncing it wrong for 3 years. That's how I was at the time. The only non-dairy milk you could get was this powder stuff. It came in a box. You mixed it up with milk, and it tasted absolutely disgusting. But there was no way I was going back. So I pursued that. But I thought, how am I going to get other people to drink this when I think it tastes disgusting?
Yeah.
Now I can go to my local supermarket in country Victoria. I can buy 10 different varieties of soy milk. I can get oat milk, rice milk, macadamia milk, or almond milk, all sorts of different milks. Not only that, I can get dairy, cheese and ice cream that don't involve animal products.
Mm.
And this is the consumers. The consumers are driving this change. Manufacturers don't suddenly just produce something and hope people will buy it. We have the power to change this. If we don't want to support animal cruelty, it's as easy as not putting that in your supermarket trolley. That's the strongest message we could send to animal-based agriculture, that we don't support the way animals are being treated. And there are so many now nutritious, delicious foods that don't involve animal suffering, we really don't have the excuses that, you know, we did 30 years ago. And it is a huge growth industry. There's a huge growth industry. There was something on our radio in Melbourne the other day about the rise in non-dairy milk. And it's been put down to a lot of people actually becoming aware about the production of dairy. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, incredibly cruel that dairy is. You know, I for years thought, well, cows produce milk because that's what cows do. Cows don't produce milk by virtue of being a cow. They are mammals and they will only produce milk for their offspring. And when their offspring is born, the calf is taken away, that milk is harvested for human consumption. What do we do with the babies? Chances are they'll be sent off to be killed in their first 7 days of life. I was horrified when I just couldn't believe it happened. The other huge black spot we have on our radar when it comes to animals is in the most maligned creature on the planet, that would have to be the humble chicken. And people don't realize that when eggs hatch, that 50% are male, 50% will be female. So in this country now we have about 16 million laying hens. So do the math. That means 16 million roosters were born to get to our 16 million laying hens. What happens to them?
Oh, I've seen it.
At a day old, these animals are killed in the most unbelievably expedient and cruel way. And
that's insanity.
I didn't know about it. And I remember, you know, I thought people were fudging it, they were exaggerating, they were just trying to scare me and shock me. And then I really thought about it, thought, well, it makes perfect sense. Like, yeah, what are we going to do with these 16 million chickens? It's really sad.
Yeah, To be honest, I have seen lots and lots of footage, and it's heartbreaking. And I think that, you know, it's something, and I really have to steel myself to keep control, because it is something that if there's anything on this planet that infuriates me to lose myself, it's that, you know, it's really the cruelty to animals that I see. And I saw something again today, and I was doing some research for our show today, and I saw a video come up that they've in Idaho now, they have reviewed the ag gag law or legislation to say that it's unconstitutional, because prior to now it was a legislative rule that you couldn't talk about what happened in agricultural farms. And on social media, now that the gag law has been lifted, there are a whole bunch of videotapes and photos and footage that have come out of the cruelty that's inflicted across the agricultural industry. That's just, it's heartbreaking. And
it is heartbreaking.
Insanity. It's insanity, though. I look at the men and I look at the people who are inflicting that cruelty.
And I think it's also, we must also take some culpability in those things as well, because what it must do to a human to actually work in those industries. Yeah, and we are paying people to do that, so we can condemn them, but we must also condemn ourselves as a society to allow that to happen.
I agree.
And I think that it's not only the most egregious things that are wrong, you know, when they're bashing baby calves and dragging sows by their legs. That, and the industry will say that's bad. I think that the routine treatment of these animals, the legalized routine treatment, the incarceration of mother pigs, the incarceration of chickens, the way that we castrate them, and the way that we end their lives, that is what I think is morally repugnant, because society actually allows it. And in the light of day and in the light of a compassionate and true heart, we wouldn't allow it.
No, that's right.
If someone sees an animal in suffering on the street, or someone hits a dog in the street with a car, people want to go and help. They'll call someone, they'll stop cars, they'll do something to help, because they see the immediate consequences of the action. We don't see the immediate consequences of our actions and how they impact upon farm animals. It's hidden, it's sanitized, and we don't think about it because everyone else is going along with the lie as well. Hopefully now people are actually starting to think, and we realise that we can change this thing around, and this will not be to the detriment of farmers. We still need food produced.
Mm.
We need it produced humanely, and if we cannot have it produced humanely, we shouldn't be doing it at all.
I totally, totally agree with you. It's interesting. I put a post up about the live export. And, you know, granted, I did get myself slammed on social media, but honestly, I'm not concerned about that. I think that there's a great responsibility that we have to take at the source. Mm. And I think that we can't turn a blind eye to it and think that it's not happening, or think, well, for the purpose of profit, I'd prefer that, I just don't want to know about that. I think the tragedy is, as you say, it's on both sides, because those people who are working in those environments and treating the animals that way, or know that the animals are going to be treated that way, how are they sleeping each night? What is their life like? It must be hell.
It has to do something to them.
Yeah,
it is really tragic, but it is hope. It is hope because I see people are speaking out against these things. People are horrified at the treatment of our animals in other countries, and we can send the strongest message to the world that this is not acceptable if we would stop our live export industry. I think people are just scared about what's going to happen, you know, changing the status quo. But any great social justice movements always has its casualties, and the casualty will be the cruelty. You know, whale industries, you know, when the whale industry shut down, people were so scared what would happen. Now we have whale watching as a huge tourist industry.
Mm.
So there are benefits. Yes, jobs will go, but new jobs will be created. I worked in a factory for many, many years, and I saw jobs there go. You know, people actually lost their jobs. They were terrible jobs. You know, they were jobs that involved repetitive strain injuries. New jobs will be created. So it's part of a society grows and evolves, that jobs will go, jobs will be created. And one of the great determinants of the progress of any society is its ability to embrace those that they thought were different. Once it was the colour of one's skin, the religion one followed, even the gender, when women didn't have the vote, that dictated the way we were treated. The great social justice movement that we're looking at now are animals. You know, they challenge us on so many levels. The best within us wants to protect them and stop their suffering, and sadly the worst wants to profit from their suffering. But we have the power to choose which world we live in. And I think that's the most important message that we can get to people, is to actually realize we empower it. We drive our society. We drive the industries that we have by the choices that we make. And it's all really embraced in our philosophy of Edgar's Mission, in our wonderful quote that says, if we could live happy and healthy lives without harming others, why wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us about Edgar's Mission. Fill us in on what that is and how it came about. You know, how many people are there, what sort of animals you have working with you or living with you?
Well, originally when we started, it was me and Edgar in 2003. And at that time I had no idea that this organisation was just going to flourish from this relationship with my pig. I adored the pig. The photo shoot was an incredible success. As a result of the photo shoot, we actually did an action with James Cromwell on the steps of Parliament House, and my task was to actually teach Edgar to walk on a lead. And I was really nervous because I only had 2 weeks to get him to walk on a lead. So I used to go down to the local park with my little dog, E.T., and I would take Edgar and my dog for walks on a lead, getting Edgar used to walking on a lead, getting used to humans being around him. And it was in that park that Edgar really did tug on much more than his leash that day, because people came from everywhere to see my pig and marvel at his unique brand of pigginess. And it was watching people's interactions with Edgar got me thinking that the best ambassadors for changing the way people think about farm animals are the animals themselves. To see these animals living lives rich and full, enjoying their lives and walking on a lead, doing pretty much everything that their dog does, the fact that they looked a little bit different. And for me, coming to know all farm animals as I do, that I realise those differences really are on the outside only. And those differences certainly do not justify the prejudice we have against farm animals. So I started to grow. Word got around that Pam loved animals and she had farm animals. Some more farm animals started to come to the sanctuary. So then I thought, well, it'd be really good if actually people could come and meet these animals and see them. So that side of the sanctuary grew. And then I started going to markets and community events, taking the animals that with me, giving a chance for people to meet them, having open days. At this stage, I was doing it all myself. I had a full-time job, I had a successful equestrian career, and I even had a partner. As Edgar's grew, so did the sanctuary, and I ended up giving up my full-time job. I hung up the boots on my successful equestrian career, and I said goodbye to my partner when he posed the question, it's me or the pig. That was probably the easiest decision I ever made.
Oh my goodness, somebody would actually do that?
That's right. Yes, it was really, I think everyone's on a different journey in life, and sadly our journeys were really divergent. I wanted to dedicate my life to the protection of animals like Edgar, and my partner didn't. And it's probably just as well, because unless someone really embraces the same philosophy as you, it's not going to work, and it wasn't going to work. I was doing it all on my own. I didn't have any staff. I had no volunteers, and I pledged to myself I would never employ people, I would never have staff, and I would never rehome an animal. They're all going to live with me forever. And then I woke up that that is just not going to work. We now employ about 9 people, full-time and part-time. We have dozens of volunteers, and we have a rehoming program, which means that we can rescue more animals. The animals that we rehome, ones that have regained health and are going to have great lives. A lot of the animals that stay with have had some sort of behavioural problems or have been here for so long that they've actually really established their roots in the sanctuary, and we haven't got the heart to move them on. We have about 350 animals that live at the sanctuary here. We have a little kindness trail that meanders throughout the farm. It's got quotes from some of the finest human minds to challenge people, to inspire people, and some just make you laugh. And it's no accident that the very first quote on our kindness trail is this: many have forgotten this truth, but you must never forget it. You remain responsible forever for what you have tamed. And that really does set the tone not only for Edgar's mission, but humanity's relationship with the animal kingdom. Mm. You know, 10,000 years ago, we domesticated the wolf. We entered the campfire of man and we started domesticating them. We bred all these different animals. We are responsible for these animals. We've irrevocably changed their lives forever. And we got a good deal out of it. Look where we are today. Animals, well, not so. We've done some pretty terrible things when it comes to the animals of this world. But we can change it.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like Edgar's mission is just this safe haven. I mean, have you got all the different farm animals there? Have you got cows and sheep and goats and...
We have just about every animal that we do farm in Australia. We even have rescued meat rabbits, of all things. Poor little rabbits. How much of a feed would you get off a rabbit? Yeah. And rabbits are farmed in the most horrific way. They're kept in tiny wire cages elevated off the ground. So these animals normally hop along on soil are kept in wire so that enormous injuries happen to their legs. It's really uncomfortable for them. They're very vulnerable. You know, rabbits like to hide. They have nowhere to hide in these cages, and they're farmed for their meat and their fur. People don't know about that. You know, you'd be horrified if you saw, you know, what your rabbit fur coat looked like before it was a rabbit fur coat. It was a living being who most certainly didn't want to be your fur coat. We even have deer at the sanctuary, but we have your more traditional animals as well: cows, pigs, sheep, goats, poultry. We have deer as well.
How amazing to be in that world where you're just surrounded by beautiful creatures. When the animals come to you, I would imagine that they would be in all various states of health or lack thereof.
That's right. And a bit different from our cats and dogs. You know, these are prey animals, so they're even more vulnerable. They see us as a predator around them, so they don't trust. They haven't really had lots of interactions with humans, so we're up against it there as well. They're not animals that have been humanized. So many challenges come from that. At the moment here in Victoria, it's winter. It is absolutely freezing outside. The wind's licking at the windows now. It's also lambing season, so we have lots of little orphan lambs coming to us just about every day that have been found in paddocks, surrendered by even farmers who said, little guys, and they know that they're not going to live if we're not able to intervene and save them. We've had a really good success rate this year. Sometimes it's not so good. You know, if we get animals that haven't had colostrum, you're really up against it.
Oh, wow. So you would have had to make sure that your knowledge about all the different needs and requirements for all animals is right up there. How did you get yourself to that point?
That's one of the things that actually I've been really lucky about. You know, when I was a child, I said all I wanted to do was to ride horses. And when I got my first pony and then I started showing the horses and I became extremely successful, I thought, I've made it. This is what I want to do in life. This is where I'm meant to be. And towards the latter part of the years, I could actually feel something tugging at me. And really, you know, it's so ironic. You think this is all you wanted in your life. And then when I got there, I realized, this is not what I wanted. This is only a chapter to get me where I need to be. Yeah. And it was in those years when I was doing the agriculture shows and that, and I was spending all those time with the other farm animals, I was actually learning about them. So many of those skills have carried over into my life as the director of Edgar's mission. The knowledge I've gained for those animals previously and also working with them every day, you're learning all the time. I think anyone who thinks that they know it all really does need to get out there and learn a lot. I'm learning every day of the week, but also there's lots of knowledge there built up from those years of actually, you know, working with farmers and looking at the animals at the shows. So there's lots of knowledge there as well that helps me every day
So how many people have you got working with you now caring for the animals on a full-time basis?
We've got about six full-time people. We have some admin staff as well. Most of the people are animal caregivers, and we have volunteers as well. We have about three or four volunteers come in and help us on a daily basis. It's enormous work,
yeah.
And actually makes me think, how can farmers look after thousands of farm animals? Where we are working throughout the day and night to look after the ones that we have, how can you look after them when you have hundreds, if not thousands, of farm animals? I just don't know. And really, if you think about it, you can't. I mean, this is why we condemn factory farming, because those animals can't get the individual care that they so desperately need. And we are responsible for them. You know, we've brought them into this world. The very, very least we should give them is a life worth living. And we fail on so many counts when it comes to the way that we farm animals today.
So how is Edgar's mission funded?
That's a really good question. Originally, I was going to fund it all myself. I was going to be this white knight who was going to work, and all my money was going to go into the animals. Well, that did happen.
Yeah.
All of my life savings. But now we survive on donations from the public, the people who believe in our work. And I cannot tell you how much it means, whether it's a little old lady who gives us a crumpled up $5 note or someone who gives us a $10,000 check. Each and every cent is valued so much, because it is the belief people have in our work, and that is something that I don't take lightly, that people actually will give us their hard-earned dollars to do the work that we do at Edgar's Mission. It is not possible now without the support of the public, and I think that's one thing Edgar's Mission has been able to garner in people, is that they believe in what we do, they see what we do. Many people would love to do what we do, but they're not in a position to do it, but they know through their donations that we can live out their dream as well. And I think it's probably the only business that actually would love to become obsolete. People think of growing really, really big. We actually would love to become obsolete. But until that time happens, people can rest assured that we will keep on keeping on for animals.
It's interesting, you know, knowing that you guys are fueled by donations. And I'm sure that there are other organisations that you know, are all for animals also. But one thing that Edgar's Mission has really mastered is being able to communicate. And I think that, you know, I look at the posts that go through social media, and the number of views on the videos, the sharing, the conversation that's generated because of the work that you do, I'm not at all surprised that people, you know, are rushing in or want to rush in to help you. I think you've done an amazing job of being able to really bring awareness and bring education to people about who these little people are, these little furry four-legged numbers, who they are and what they are, and you actually get to see them as beautiful creatures.
And I think that you touched on something that's very important and very close to my heart. My dad actually did a really, really good job on me in never asking for anything. I remember as a kid I'd go to someone's house and they'd say, would you like a drink of water? I'd be dying of thirst, and I would say, no, I'm okay. And you never ask for anything. So it's been really, really hard for me to actually accept donations from the public. And so I feel very accountable to the public to actually show them that, you know, we really do deserve and earn their dollar. Because like you say, there are lots of charities out there. Lots of people want money. And I think, as I said, it's something I don't take lightly, that, you know, your donation goes a long, long way with Edgar's Mission. You get bang for your buck. You can see the change that is happening for animals, because for me it's no longer enough now just to rescue one animal, because if we just keep rescuing animals, it's not going to change anything. In 100 years' time, people will still be doing the same thing. In fact, it will be worse. Unless we change the way people view farm animals, nothing is going to change. I'm very adamant that we don't never tell people what to do or what not to do. We really encourage people to think, and I think that's most important, because no one wants to be told what to do. But if you can encourage people to think, again, it comes back to my belief in the goodness of the human heart, that we are programmed to care, that we don't want to cause suffering to others. And through our videos and our social media and visits to the sanctuary, we aim to connect people, and we do it in a positive, engaging way. I don't want to see awful images of animals being killed, and I don't think the public want to see that at all. We see it, and we see the comments that come back on our Facebook page and other social media. People enjoy coming to Edgar's Mission. When they've had a bad day, they know they can hop on our Facebook page and they'll see a story of hope. Even when an animal passes away, there's still a story of hope. We gave hope to the most hopeless of situations, and that's what people want to see. They want to be empowered. They don't want their heart to shut down. They don't want to be bombarded with sad doom and gloom. We give people hope, and we give animals hope as well.
So if anybody wants to come and visit the mission, Where would they find you?
We're in central Victoria, a little town called Lancefield. We're actually closed for the winter at the moment. It's way too cold for visitors, way too cold for us. All the animals are snug up in the barn, though. We're just the ones that run around cleaning. We're going to be open for spring tours in September. And all bookings are by appointment. You can't just rock up because we're maybe busy doing an animal, something with an animal, taking animals to the vets. And we know that you would only want it that way. The animals will always come first. So we do have tour times, and you can book all that online. The tours are free, but we just ask people to book in advance so that we know that you're coming and you can join a wonderful tour and have a wonderful visit around the sanctuary, meet our animals and hear from our wonderful guides as well.
Now, you've also got a really amazing initiative coming up on the first week of October. Tell us about that.
Be Kind to Animals Week. I'm actually really excited and proud of this initiative we created a few years ago. And we picked the first week in October for several reasons. One, it's World Animal Day in there, and it's also Gandhi's birthday, two inspirational events for animals. October 1 to 7, so it gives people a chance to really concentrate their kindness for animals, because you have to be kind 365 days of the year, but extra kind in October 1 to 7. We encourage people to do an initiative in that week. It may be something like contacting your local library and doing a display about animal-related books, doing a cruelty-free bake sale or cruelty-free morning tea at your workplace. Schools can do competitions, writing stories about animals, going to volunteer at your local animal shelter. And also a reminder there too that humans are a part of the animal kingdom as well. So maybe go and visit an elderly neighbour or your local nursing home and make sure you can enrich the lives of others as well. We've also got the Be Kind to Animals Week website as well, and there's little awareness ribbons that we're encouraging people to wear, little yellow ribbons with different footprints of animals and, of course, the human footprint as well. So people can email us at info@edgarsmission.org.au and we can send them out information packs about that as well.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you can count me in on that. I'm writing it down now.
Wonderful.
So donations are a big part of what funds you. So I just want to encourage everybody who's listening to the show that, you know, go on to the Edgar's Mission's website, which is edgarsmission.org.au, and have a look for yourself and be inspired as I was to you know, $5 here and there, whatever it is, it all helps towards the betterment and the changing of the way that we're relating to our animals. And also to the Be Kind to Animals Week. So send an email through to Edgar's Mission at info@edgarsmission.org.au and get yourself a pack, get all the information that you need and do something really special. I'm going to really put my thinking cap on and I think I'm going to do something really huge. I'll check my diary and make sure that I'm not doing anything, but chances are, for those of you guys who are listening, I'm going to be sending you an invitation to join me on something really cool. So, Pam, this has been an amazing conversation, and I know that there's still so much more that you could talk about and share to try to raise awareness and to bring education to people so that they can make more harmonious choices and choices that are for the betterment of all sentient beings. So no doubt when it's spring, I'm going to take my little camera crew and I'm going to come on down and do a live shoot down at Edgar's Mission. Would that be all right with you?
That would be fantastic. I'll make sure I'm here that day. That sounds great. We'd love to share it with the rest of the world. So we really look forward to having you, Karen, and I'll give you a big hug in person.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That sounds absolutely awesome. Pam, this has been an amazing show. You've made my day. You've made my month. And I'm absolutely thrilled to have been able to connect with you. So thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for everything that you do and thank you for everything that you are and your inspiration and desire to make the world a better place for our four-legged families. It brings a tear to my eye just at the thought to know that there are people like you out there that have so much love and so much sensitivity to the caring for all. So, goodness. There you go.
Well, I really thank you for the opportunity and thank you for all you do for animals, and just a message to your listeners to be kind.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. And for everybody who's listening to the show, go to my Facebook page at allthews.facebook.com/Karen Smith And you can also, of course, post any comments or questions at allthews.karenscouch.com. So join us here next week as we get excited with our next guest. And I just hope that you guys all whip on over to edgarsmission.org.au and start to really feel like you're contributing and making the world a better place. You know, one thing I've discovered about myself since I was very little, I really struggled to see animals suffer. But I always knew that I could make money to the extent that I could pay people or support people who can help animals who are in a place of need. So, you know, it's a huge part of what I do, and it was the number one reason why I started my business in the first place. So have a think about it. Have a think about the contribution that you want to make to the betterment of humanity and all of our creatures on this planet, and reduce the size of your footprint. Give it a little bit of thought. Hopefully you've enjoyed today's show. All my love coming out to everybody on the other side. Big love. Go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and please tell everybody that you know that you love Karen's Couch and get them to start listening. We have some awesome stuff coming up. So make sure that you tune in next week, and I'm going to see you here, same time, same station. Big hugs. Bye, everybody.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives. Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.